Hello everyone and welcome to Good Morning Greece, a podcast mini-series presented by Pangolin, the conservation podcast. I'm your host, Jack Baker, and today, as I have been all this week, I am back on a beach in sunny Zakynthos, slightly more windy Zakynthos today, so you might hear some more waves, but I am here to tell you all about some of the fantastic, amazing conservation stories of Greece. So far this week, we've talked about animals, we've talked about legends, we've talked about myths, we've talked about ecotourism, and today I am back to tell you about some plants, with a specific focus on more myths and legends. Everyone seemed to really like that yesterday, so I'm back to tell you a little bit more about those. And the reason I wanted to talk about plants today, in relation to myths and legends and kind of Greece, is that I think, and it's something that's kind of come to me in the last few days, maybe there's lots of research out there about it, but I'm on my holidays, so I haven't read it. But something I've been thinking about is how we anthropomorphize animals when we talk about them. We make them very human, we want to kind of make them relatable, and it's really tricky to do that with plants, because obviously animals have eyes, they have mouths, they have families that act in very similar ways to us sometimes. So it's easy to make, or easier to make humans relate to animals. But plants, they don't have that necessarily, yet they're still extremely threatened and extremely endangered. They have 40% of all kind of plant species are threatened with extinction. They're threatened with the faces of deforestation and habitat loss and kind of the expansion of farmland and under the sea plants, I'm looking at the ocean, are threatened with things like trawling, kind of destroying the seabeds, kind of humans going in and interfering with ecosystems. So there's all these problems facing plants, but it's hard to anthropomorphize them sometimes and make people relate to their stories. So in being in Greece and thinking about the myths and legends, I've been thinking a lot about, well, could these legends perhaps be the key to making people understand or appreciate plants more than they already do or necessarily thought they could? Because a lot of the stories of Greek myth actually involve people becoming plants through some kind of tragedy or horrible thing, or they involve plants in some way that is really interesting and clever and cool. So I thought I'd tell you some of those myths, let you fall in love with the plants and see if it's as effective a tool as I think it may be. Let me know. You can contact me on social media. We're at Pangolin Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all of them. So yeah, go on there. Let us know what you think. Let me know what you think. And we can see. So the first story I wanted to tell you was the story of aconite. Aconite is a tall purple blue flower that is extremely poisonous, and it was cursed by a witch to be that way. And the reason this plays such a strong role in Greek myth is it was actually this poison that was used by the goddess Athena when she was challenged Arachne to a spinning contest. So Arachne was this famous renowned weaver. She would weave the most beautiful intricate patterns in all of Greece, and people would come, they would see the designs, they would come and see them being weaved in some kind of live display to see stories unfold before them. But Arachne, because of this, got quite big-headed. She thought she was the best, she thought she was the bee's knees, and the goddess Athena did not like that. The goddess Athena did not like that when Arachne had the nerve to say she was the finest in all of Greece, and not even the goddess Athena could do what she did. Now, in her clever way, Athena came down, presented herself in her kind of earthly form, and came to Arachne's show. She watched from the back, disguised herself as an older kind of woman, and hid herself away. Then at the end, she challenged Arachne. She said, "Oh, so you really think you are the greatest in the land?" And Arachne replied, "Of course, I am unchallenged by all, even the goddess Athena." And at that point, Athena ripped back her disguise, revealed herself to be who she truly was, this goddess of what's war, is it? Yes, goddess of war, and this powerful woman of kind of amazing stature and skill. And Arachne obviously was slightly terrified, but she was she had to hold her nerve, because Athena then challenged her to a weaving contest. They sat down, they weaved, and Athena weaved and weaved and weaved all these beautiful patterns, stories of love and this and that and the next thing, and the power of the gods. And Arachne sat down enraged by this. She thought, I'm being embarrassed. So what did she do? She, when it came to her turn, she wove, and she wove and she wove and she wove stories of the discrepancies of the gods, the places where they had failed or misled humanity or let people kind of die or kind of the revealed their kind of mistakes. Now Athena didn't take too kindly to this. She looked angry, and as soon as Arachne finished weaving, she kind of realized what she'd done. She'd angered this goddess who had a reputation for, while being kind of fair, she had angered a goddess. It's one of the 12 Olympians, daughter of Zeus. She'd angered her and upset her, and in her fear and in her kind of whatever it was that overcame her, she realized she'd made a mistake. She tried to beg for her life, she tried to run, she tried to do whatever, but she could not. Athena was angry, and Athena gave her the poison from the aconite, which turned Arachne into a spider, where she sits and she weaves the most beautiful patterns still to this day. Now, I think that's a fantastic story. Now, that one's more a spidery related story, but it does relate to the poison of the aconite as well. I think what's interesting is, and it's something that kind of comes up a lot in Greek myth, is how it changes. So that's that telling of the story. But another telling of the story is that, dependent on how forgiving you see the goddess Athena, some say she poisoned. Sometimes it's said that she, in fact, let... Arachne was so scared, she ran outside and she hung herself from a tree outside her home. And from that hung body, Athena then took and turned her into a spider. So, interesting different takes. The aconite one more plant related, obviously, so that's why I told you. yes, interesting nonetheless. So yeah, that's kind of the first one I wanted to tell you. And I think the second one is kind of, they kind of relate to one another, because they... there's two stories here that are very, very similar, and again, goes to show the kind of similarities, the oddness of Greek myth, that sometimes stories do one thing, sometimes stories do another thing. Sometimes the same story involves two completely different characters. And so the first telling of the story is that Hermes, the messenger god, was playing with his lover, Crocus. Now, Crocus was the a beautiful young man that he would play with and then go off and do his thing, because gods are not always the most faithful. But when he was with Crocus, he was so happy, he was overjoyed. And one day they were out playing with a discus, and Hermes threw the discus and it cracked poor Crocus on the side of the head, where he fell dead. Because it does, a god has a mighty strong arm, it will take you out if it hits you. And where Crocus fell dead, the blood that dripped into the soil, Hermes turned into the flower, the crocus, the beautiful purple flower that we all now know and love. And so that's kind of one telling. But a similar telling of that story is to do with the hyacinth. So another beautiful, incredible flower. And this one is slightly different in that this one has a bit more malice behind it. This was not an accident. The god Apollo, I believe, was playing with his lover Hyacinth. And the jealous Zephyrus, who was the west wind, was watching. Zephyrus also loved the beautiful Hyacinth. He wanted to be with him, but of course he could not. So what he did was, when Apollo threw a discus to the lovely Hyacinth, the west wind caught it. He picked it up and he made the disc careen into the neck of Hyacinth, and it murdered him dead. He fell to the ground and there he lay, and from that the god Apollo turned him into a hyacinth flower that we know and love today. So two very similar stories, all kind of wrapped up in one, same kind of plot, it's different gods, kind of interesting nonetheless. Of course, the most famous story of flowers in Greek myth, perhaps, is the story of Echo and Narcissus, where Echo is a little nymph who is cursed by the god Hera, queen of the gods Hera, I should say, give her proper respect, because she hides the fact that one of her sisters is having an affair with Zeus, Hera's husband. Hera is obviously not happy about this, and Echo is cursed with the fact that all she can do is repeat what she hears. So she hears someone say hello, she can only say hello. She says, they say goodbye, all she can say is goodbye. She can just repeat anything that is fed to her. Now, of course, over time, we know maybe where this story is going with Echo, but we don't know how she manifests, perhaps. So I'm going to tell you that today, how she manifests herself as the Echo that we still hear in caves and things today. So what happens is, after she's cursed, Echo runs around kind of looking for love, looking for someone to find, to look after her, to respect her, because she has this horrible, horrible curse, and she cannot find anyone, until one day she stumbles upon the lovely Narcissus, the most beautiful boy in all of the land. Now Narcissus sees her coming, and he is immediately upset and offended, because everywhere he goes, because he is so beautiful and wonderful, he is come upon by women, by men, by whoever can get close enough to him. They will try and flirt and try and impress and woo him, and he's fed up. So when Echo approaches and starts repeating everything he said, he gets extra annoyed, he gets extra spiteful, he falls by the river in anger and kind of pushes her away and says, go, run. And in her sadness, Echo runs and runs and runs, being rejected by the last person she could possibly be rejected from. She runs and she runs and she runs, and she hides in a cave. And when she hides in that cave, over time she slowly rots, her body dies, and she turns into the Echo that we know and can be found everywhere now today. That repeating voice that when you shout into a cave, hello, it kind of shouts back at you, because Echo is still lonely, trying to find love and affection and attention. But that leaves us with Narcissus, the beautiful boy who had fallen by a river. And in that river, he found the most beautiful thing he'd ever seen. He found someone as beautiful as he, and he thought, now, this is who I want to be with. This is the person for me. He looked into the river and he saw this kind of beautiful boy staring back at him. The perfect crystal clear waters. The guy was just beneath the surface, just out of reach. But every time Narcissus reached down to touch him, the boy disappeared. He would be gone. The water would kind of crackle and the boy would retreat into the distance. So Narcissus thought, well, what am I going to do? I can't be with him. So he thought, and he sat and he stared 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 and he stared, until eventually the gods took pity on poor, beautiful Narcissus and turned him into the daffodil, the Narcissus. That we know and love today, the flower that can often be found growing on riverbanks, looking down into the water. And yeah, so I think that one's kind of a sad one. I don't know. So we've had, now that I think about these, maybe they aren't the best way to communicate flowers, because we've had two murders by discus. We've had someone so vain they turn into a flower. And yeah, who was the first one? Oh, aconite, the poison. So, still interesting, but fantastic tales that I think maybe we can all learn something from. Don't challenge gods, being one. Maybe avoid frisbees if you can. And yeah, the last one of be careful and wary of your own vanity. Don't let it take complete hold of you. Now, those are kind of some of the stories of plants in the Greek mythology and the Greek canon. There are two more that I wanted to mention, because they're two of the iconic species of plant. There is the laurel and there is the olive tree. Now, the story of the laurel is an interesting one. Our good friend Apollo is back for this one. And Apollo was cursed by the love god Eos. They had had an exchange, and in this his kind of punishment, Eos cursed Apollo with the fact that he would be forever in love with the nymph Daphne. So Daphne was this beautiful tree nymph, but the god Eos was extra cruel, because he then turned around and said, well, you may be in love with Daphne, but Daphne will never, ever, ever love you. And so Daphne spent the rest of her life fleeing the god Apollo. She wanted to get away with him more than anything that he could, anything that she could muster. She just wanted to run and run and run and be away. She was repulsed by him. He was disgusting to her. She didn't like it. She didn't want to be near it. She didn't want to think about it. She just wanted to be away from the wretched, horrid Apollo. and she got her wish, because eventually, after praying and praying and praying, the gods took pity on poor Daphne and they turned her into the laurel bush. And from it, Apollo plucked the leaves of the laurel, wove a beautiful headpiece and wore it for the rest of days, which is where you get one of the national plants of Greece, the laurel. The final story then is also one of the national plants of Greece, and that is the story of the Athens and the olive tree. So when Athens was founded, it was founded as Attica, and the people of Attica, they thought, well, we are going to name our beautiful new capital, well, future capital, don't know if they knew that yet, but future capital city, after one of the gods. And the two gods who threw their hat into the ring were the lovely Athena and Poseidon, god of the sea. And so it was decided that whatever, whichever of the gods, whomever of the gods, whatever it is, could produce the best and most kind of impressive gift to Attica would be, the city would be named after them. And so Poseidon, he rose up and he struck the rock that is above Athens. He hit it with all force, and from it sprung a beautiful fountain of water. It, water poured and it ran and it was cool and it was beautiful, and but it was effectively useless, because that water the god of the sea cracked from that rock was salty. It wasn't usable, it wasn't drinkable by man, it wasn't as beautiful and wonderful a gift as perhaps he would have intended. So smug Athena came along and thought, I will give them something they can use. I'll give them something fantastic. I'll give them something magical. I'll give them something incredibly useful to them. And so she planted the head of her spear, and from the head of her spear sprouted the first olive. And it is said now that since then, every olive tree of now Athens, named after wonderful Athena, is descended from this original that Athena planted herself in the competition to be named, to have Athens named after her, which I think is a beautiful, fantastic story to kind of end on, because it's the iconic plant of Greece. Olive oil obviously plays a huge role in their kind of food and cooking and culture, and the olive tree itself is kind of this icon of Greece and the Greek countryside when you go around and see them. And so to have this kind of wonderful origin story for it, I think is absolutely fantastic. And that's why I kind of, my voice went a bit funny there. That's why I kind of wanted to tell these stories, because they make you fall in love with plants. And I don't know if it's just me thinking too much about it, or I don't know if it's just whatever it is, but I do think that plants have this rough break of not being able to be anthropomorphized as easily as animals. And so I wondered, what do you think? Do you think that's the case? Do you think these stories could help inspire people? If so, please let me know, because I'd love to hear your take. I'd love to hear what you had to say. I'd love to hear your favourite Greek myths. And I'd love to know if these kind of stories helped you gain a new appreciation for plants, or perhaps a fear of the Greek canon of kind of mythological deities. I'd be intrigued to know what you all thought of them, and who your favourite gods are. That would be fun. If you want to let me know that would be really, really interesting. Because I'm really into Greek myths, and I never get a chance to tell them, so I'm glad I got the chance to tell them here. That's the real reason for this. Nothing to do with anthropomorphising. It's just an excuse for me to tell Greek myths. I hope you've enjoyed this kind of different episode for me. I hope you've enjoyed hearing these incredible stories about these amazing, beautiful plants. Please let me know what you think. You can follow us on social media. We're at Pangolin Podcast on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook, so make sure to follow us on there. You can also follow us on your podcast streaming service of choice. We've got a couple more, maybe one more of these to go. I think I'm going to, the last episode of Good Morning Greece will be coming out tomorrow, unless something really exciting happens. So make sure to subscribe so you don't miss out on it. Thank you so much for listening. This has been very different for me. I've loved it. I used to do storytelling in high school because I was one of those people who liked to be a bit different and do all the clubs that would be considered nerdy but actually were the most useful ones because they actually taught you real life skills. So it's been great fun for me to kind of help share these stories with you, and I hope that you enjoy them and tell them to people around you. Before I ramble for too much longer, I just want to say another massive thank you, another massive, yeah, send all my love to all of you. And one more time, goodbye, Greece. Bye. Hello everyone, just a quick note to say that when I was listening back to this, I realised that I made a terrible, terrible error. I accidentally named the god Eos as the love god in the story of Daphne and Apollo, but that is not true at all. The god of love is Eros. Eos is the goddess of the dawn, who releases the sun chariot of Helios every morning to then race across the sky and give us all the light and nourishment from the sun that we need. Eros, as I say, god of love. They're all very similar names, and it's first thing in the morning here. I'm very, very sorry. I hope it didn't ruin it for anyone. But yes, in case you were wondering, Eros, god of love, Eos, god of the dawn, and yeah, Apollo, unlucky Apollo, made a fool and made angry Eros, not Eos. Can you see where my confusion lay? Okay, until next time, guys. Sorry about that one, and goodbye.